You're listening to a Bookmark podcast. For rights reasons, we've had to shorten or omit some of the music chosen by our guests, but we hope you still enjoy listening.
Cambridge 105 Radio. Bookmark with Lee Chambers on Cambridge 105 Radio.
With Heffer's Bookshop, the great Cambridge bookseller since 1876.
Hello and welcome to Bookmark on Cambridge 105 Radio. This is a show that talks about books and writing with a local slant. And I'm joined today on the programme by Richard Reynolds. Nice to have you here on Bookmark, Richard.
Great to be here, Lee.
Lovely to have you here. You're here to talk about a crime fiction. You are a crime fiction aficionado extraordinaire. We'll be reviewing the year's best at crime at Christmas, shining the spotlight on some of our brilliant local authors as well. What could be more festive than that?
Oh, that's just terrific.
We'll give you a proper introduction in just a moment. But let's talk first about your day job at Heffer's Bookshop in Cambridge. You've been there almost 40 years.
It's a long time, yes. It's gone very swiftly. It's hugely enjoyable. I can't think of anything better to do. And really, I suppose in a way it's become a bit of a hobby. And so a hobby during the day and reading other times too. And I really enjoy it. I love the interaction between my colleagues and reps and the public. And it all feeds my reading habits.
Brilliant job for somebody who likes books, because you must be discovering people all the time.
Oh, all the time, yes. And of course that makes it much worse, because I have a house full of books. My loft office is, well, I'm having a bit of a clear out at the moment, and my wife said the other day when she came up into it that she didn't think it was any different to the last time she came up, and she thought I'd been clearing out books, you know, for months. And I suppose really each day I hear people talking about what they're reading, because that informs my choice for what I buy for the shop and everything. And I suppose too, every time we see reps, it's like a child in a sweetie shop wanting to read everything in sight, not just crime fiction. I love, you know, narrative travel and biography and lots of fiction too, so it's difficult sort of honing it to a small selection.
Must be nice buying a book, you know, taking a punt on a book, putting it on your shelves and then seeing it fly off.
Yes, or not.
Well, can you think of some that you thought, I'm not sure about this, but, you know, I like it. I think others will. Can you remember one that's done that?
Oh, yes. Well, I think, you know, I mean, lots of the, you know, books from the Golden Age in particular, the books that sometimes aren't very good. I can think of one, I won't mention the title. There's an awful lot of filling up of petrol, and that seems to be on every page. But then, of course, in the 30s, that would have been happening, you know, sort of normally. And I can think of, there was a very good book, and I just can't buy, the surname is Donoghue, called The Stolen Child, which myself and another colleague really thought it was a terrific read. And we did sell a lot of copies of it, but we seemed to, according to the publisher, we sold a quarter of what they sold, you know, in the country.
Wow, nationally.
So they hadn't done really very well with it in all the other bookshops that we sold, you know, loads.
And the Golden Age, I know you're going to be talking about the Golden Age of crime fiction. What age is that? What years are we talking?
Well, it's really sort of, I suppose you could say 1915. A lot of people talk of it as just being between the two world wars, but I think it extends back a few years, say to the Anthony Berkeley book Trent's Last Case, and I suppose going forward you could say take in Josephine Tay, so she was in the 1950s, and I suppose then you've got those people writing now who set their books in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, and that's, you know, a really popular area. And I suppose also because we knew, well, then, I suppose, there was the death penalty, so we knew that the perpetrator would either take cyanide or, you know, go to the gallows sort of thing.
Yeah, the stakes were high then, weren't they?
Yes, they were certainly.
And
were.
We'll be talking about Josephine Tay, because we'll be talking about Nicola Epstein, yes, whose heroine in her novels is Josephine Tay. But let's say your first choice of music now, which is a Handel aria. Your Scherzo are Infida. Is that Infida? Is that how you pronounce it?
Something like that, I'm sure. Yes.
Is music important to you?
Oh, I love it. I love listening to music when I'm reading. And I was thinking the other day that I remember when I read Rebecca Stott's Ghost Walk, which I loved, which was published some years ago now, which we launched at Heffers, and set at Trinity and about Newton. And it was a terrific read set then in Newton's time and in the present day. And I remember listening to César Franck's sort of music, and it was just that eeriness of the music, it was really atmospheric, and it really helped with the reading. So I really enjoyed that.
And why this Handel aria, this one in particular?
Well, the mezzo soprano Alice Coote, we saw at the English National Opera a few years ago singing. She sang the title role of Xerxes, and she has such a fabulous voice. And I think this one, the Handel, I love. Anyway, last weekend we went to see Trinity College Music Society's Julius Caesar, which was fabulous. Sad it was only on for 2 days. And I just love Handel. And Alice Coote has the lyrical quality of the music and that sort of wistfulness which you get especially from this.
That's the Handel aria Scherzo Infida, sung by Alice Coote, the first choice of music on Bookmark today, from our studio guest Richard Reynolds. Richard's been bookseller and buyer at Heffer's Bookshop in Cambridge for almost 40 years. His reputation as an expert in crime fiction is both national and international. He's chair of the judging panel for the Crime Writing Association's Gold Dagger Award and also series editor for the Oleander Press London Band series of classic crime novels. Well, the obvious question, Richard, is why crime fiction? What is it about crime fiction that appeals particularly to you?
Well, I suppose, you know, we all like a puzzle, don't we? And I think it fulfills that sort of need. And I think I know when I was at my sort of prep school, I suppose, I discovered John Buchan and Rider Haggard and all those sort of thrilling adventure series, and then moved on to Agatha Christie. And I suppose I just loved the chase, as it were, and the resolution, the chance of perhaps discovering who'd done it before we were told about it, and sort of taking a punt, and not at that age, I don't think, but just enjoying the story then. But later on, I think, just, yes, the chase very much of it, and being told and sort of taking that guess and sort of, you know, being led down the wrong paths. And even now, you know, my wife's always saying, you know, we're watching something on TV and whatever, and she said, well, tell me who done it. And, you know, you just, and it's often with TV, it is often that character that hasn't had very much of a say, and you are really surprised. But in the book form, I heard someone say the other day that they thought Agatha Christie cheated, and in the last sort of 25% of the book, a character was introduced who was the perpetrator, but really she did play by, you know, she was a fair play writer.
And has it changed over this? I mean, you talk about John Buchan and Agatha Christie there. Has it changed over this? It's changed massively, hasn't it?
Oh, yes. I think now you've got, when you think how many books are published every week, how many detective stories, you know, published, and now it seems to be more the sort of domestic noir, psychological thriller.
Gritty.
Oh, it's grittier and, you know, sort of more based in sort of perhaps reality. We're not living in an age of servants and butlers and necessarily, well, you know, the upper echelons are, but
and the Scandi novels as well.
Oh, yes, yes. Fantastic translated crime fiction. You think some of the French novels, Fred Vargas and her Inspector Adamsberg, the sort of rather eccentric detective. I just love those. And there's some very good Icelandic and Ragnar Jonasson and Indridason and Sigurdar Dottir. There's just so many. And I've got great pals who read an awful lot of translated fiction. I don't read nearly enough. mainly because for our award, we're reading those who are published in English, or written in English and by English authors.
So what do you think it'll go in the future, given that journey that you've had already from the likes of Agatha Christie and John Buchan yes. to where we are now, as you say, that really gritty urban feel to it? Do you think, can you see any trends in crime fiction for the future?
Well, I think we are moving away from the sort of slasher type. Well, we have moved away from the slasher type sort of detective fiction. I remember the critic Jessica Mann said that if she had any more slasher type horrific murder mysteries sent to her, she would just not review them. And I don't know whether that's a trend in with just her or with others too. I suppose we've also got the futuristic detective fiction in the way you could say someone like Aronovitch, his London Under London series, which I haven't read, but colleagues absolutely adore his things. There seems to be a move perhaps more so towards that. But historical crime fiction, which is it always been sort of popular, we've got people like Christopher Brookmyre writing with his wife as Ambrose Parry, and a very, very good sort of medical historical fiction set in the Victorian era. And there's two in that series. And I think that's a really good, good to pick up that at some point.
Do you think Brexit will make any difference? I mean, it seems an odd question, but Brexit seems to be impacting all kinds of areas of our life that we didn't think it would. Do you think you'll see an impact in crime fiction?
Well, I think the impact that it might have is that people, to escape from it, might want to curl up with some good books, or just go to those sort of box sets on TV and things like that, just to try and blot it out, really. I think, really, we've had, these years of it, and although it is important what happens, I think when in troubled times, especially with sort of maybe the stories from the Golden Age, you really do want that resolution, and that the Golden Age authors do offer that, because there is the perpetrator does receive their comeuppance.
There is an ending.
Yes, there is an ending.
Yes, as
there's
you
no
say, it's
sort
escape
of
from real life.
Left high and dry, yes.
And you mentioned TV there. The effect of TV on the sales of crime fiction on particular authors, that's been phenomenal, hasn't it? I mean, Anne Cleves herself.
Oh, terrific.
Has said,
yes.
She wouldn't have been as successful bookwise if Shetland hadn't been taken up and Vera.
Yes, I think she's done very well. And I think ever since winning the Duncan Lawrie Prize, which the Gold Dagger, they sponsored it before. They sponsored my first year of chairing the Gold Dagger. And that really was a very good prize to win. And now she's started this new series, which is equally good. I think she's just so gifted. And I think, before she had the Shetland series and the Vera series, she had two other series, a sort of bird watching series, which her husband was deeply involved in, and I think he was her great encourager. And I think she just tells a really good story, and she even wrote a story for a collection that we put together called Bodies in the Bookshop some years ago, and just gave us the story. It didn't demand a sort of fee or anything like that, and it was just very generous of her.
And it must have, seeing crime fiction crime series on TV, if people go and buy Anne Cleves, then they might buy something else. It
yes.
probably has a knock-on effect on other authors and the genre in general.
Oh, it does, yes. And I think things in a series, you're often not only going for the detection, but you're going to catch up with where the characters are and their lives and everything. And I think, people like Ellie Griffiths and Stephen Booth, there's those with long series, running series, and their characters. And and I think even with Ellie Griffiths and her 1950s set Brighton series, the Mephisto series, very, very successful,
OK, well, let's look at some of your favourite books of the year, favourite crime books of the year. What ones would you really enjoyed and you'd recommend people to read?
Well, I've discovered I've got, for the more traditional amongst you, I've discovered recently Helen Cox, who's got two books in a series so far, one called Murder in the Minster and she has as her detective a librarian detective.
A librarian,
yes.
Yeah, picking up librarians.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, they're normally Hartley. The victims, aren't they?
Oh, yes. But in this, well, she's nearly the victim, but Kit Hartley, she's a trilby wearer, Lady Grey tea drinker, a taker of no nonsense. And she thinks by reading lots of detective stories, she might possibly be able to solve one or two crimes. And I think it really works very well. It's just sort of, as soon as you start reading, you get involved with three main characters, her friend Evie, and Grace, her assistant. And I think there's great character interplay. And it's a good old cosy read. And the second one is called A Body in the Bookshop. And so the police woman from the first series gets accused of murder, and Kit takes it upon herself to find out why.
Are you looking, when you're reading, Richard, are you looking for something different? Because, you know, there's so many that are similar, aren't there? It must be quite hard to find something different, and actually for a writer to write something that stands out.
Yes, I am, but I often do. I mean, I'm true to my bookseller roots. I like reading sort of biblio mysteries as well. So anything that comes along that is has that sort of book slant, I will certainly look at it and sort of think, oh yes. And we've got to put together quite a nice little list, and we've called it A Gentle Madness, which I think, you know, to a certain extent, bookselling is, because you're expected to have a vast knowledge of you know, everything that's coming at you, things, world events, you know, everything, the whole world comes to you in one sense.
So that was Helen Cox,
Helen Cox.
And the novel?
Murder in the Minster. Yes. And the second one I would suggest, in the same sort of vein, is someone called Stephanie Austin, and she's written a series called Dead in Devon. Well, that's her first one. And she's got an antique dealer as her detective, Juno Brown. And I think Stephanie Austin has a connection with the antiques world, so she knows all about it. And I think that's a really good, strong read, as you get to know her character works for a bit of a rogue antiques dealer, and something happens to him, and she ends up investigating matters surrounding him and his pals. And then the second in the series is called Dead on Dartmoor. so you can see where
what you see,
this
yes.
is going. So, and
is this, so we've had a librarian and antiques dealer. This sounds to me like writers trying to kick out of the standard cop detective. This
yes.
is trying to place something in a different place, isn't it?
Yes, in that sort of different milieu, I suppose, really, in a sense that it's the cosier read. You know, the police are on site, but they're sort of they help out, especially in the Helen Cox one, I suppose. They're a bit, you can see a sort of development of the characters and sort of friendships growing between the police and the main detective, and I think that's sort of rather good, as it has, I suppose, in the Ellie Griffiths with Nelson and Ruth Galloway. So, you know, there's that sort of familiarity when you're sort of picking up the book. You're meeting up with old friends, really, aren't you? So you're not only curling up with a good book, or potentially a good book, but going back to sort of series characters who...
I suppose there's also the level of identification that you seem perhaps to identify with somebody who's not a trained police officer.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I mean, these are women. We're talking about a lot of women writers.
Oh,
it seems
yes.
to me in the last 10, 20 years, women have really kind of taken over this genre.
Yes, I suppose. Well, they have. I suppose you could, going back to the 1930s, a lot of the Golden Age writers then were chaps. You know, of course, you could add Agatha Christie and Nia Marsh and Marjorie Allingham and Dorothy Sayers. But the majority of them were, you know, engineers. They all had, I mean, someone like Freeman Wills Crofts was an engineer, a railway engineer. He was ill for a few months, and he thought, "Oh, I can write something like this." And of course, so it was a very engineerial type read. And he went on to write books for the next 37 years. But yes, now I suppose you could say that a lot of women writers. I mean, they get to the nub of things. They're not afraid to twist out that sort of nasty, you know, sort of situation. But some very good chaps of writing as well. But a lot of my choices are from women.
So that
authors.
Was Dead in Devon, and that was Stephanie Austin.
Yeah. Stephanie Austin. And the third one in that sort of traditional mystery type thing is the Julia Chapman mystery set in York. And she's written four so far. They're hugely popular in France. I don't know why, but they are really good, and they feature the only slightly corny thing about it is her main detective is called Delilah, and the an old flame from 20 years before is called Samson.
No, I thought you might be about to say that, aren't you?
And he's been dismissed from his job at the Met in London, and he comes back north to the same village, and she has a dating agency, and it soon becomes the detective agency.
And this is in York, and look, we know how important location is crime fiction. Quite nice to have something set outside of London.
Oh, yes, yes. And it works really well, and it's in a sort of small village, Bruncliffe. And you've got a whole cast of characters, and in each book you meet different lots of them, and the other lovely thing about it is that Delilah has a dog called Tollpuddle, who's a Weimaraner, and that works well. And you become really effective when something happens to the dog and all that sort of thing. And that's
so
really rather nice.
Remind us of that writer's name.
That's Julia Chapman.
Julia Chapman,
and she's written four, and she's got a fifth one due in April 2020 called Date with Danger. But the first one is called Date with Death.
Right.
And they're just brilliant. Then on to the, rather a large coffee table book by John Curran, The Hooded Gunman, which is the emblem that you see on lots of, or you would have seen on lots of HarperCollins crime fiction. And that was really the mark of something being really, really good. And this book is a superlative reference book. It's 400 pages, and it's got more than 2,000 colour pictures of all of those sort of HarperCollins classics published between 1930 and 1994, and it's absolutely fabulous.
And the artwork then, I imagine.
Oh, yes,
stunning.
And John Curran, he's the Agatha Christie specialist. He's written extensively on Agatha Christie, and he'll always sought for advice and information on Agatha Christie and take guided tours around her house. And there's a very good event in London every year called Bodies from the Library, which he's put together, which the British Library host on, and it's all Golden Age detective fiction.
So that's John Curran.
John Curran, and the book is called The Hooded Gunman. And then, a rather grittier read is M.W. Craven, and it's called The Puppet Show, and it did in fact win this year's CWA Gold Dagger.
That's the Crime Writers Association, yeah.
That's
a much cherished award, isn't it? I mean, it's very prestigious.
Yes, it is. I mean, there are lots of awards that the Crime Writers Association give out every year. It's about 9 awards plus this one. But in The Puppet Show, a serial killer is on the loose. Elderly men are being picked off and mutilated and burnt. And it's got... there's a slight warning. The first couple of chapters might put you off, but it is a really terrific read. I read it in about 4 hours, and I just zoomed through it because the character interplay is terrific. It's got terrific characters in the Washington Poe, who's the detective, and his sidekick Fleming, and then it introduces a wonderfully innocent and quite brilliant data analyst, who is a young girl she's called Tilly Bradshaw. But it's a complex plot based on quite a simple premise.
Elderly men being the victims, that's very unusual. That's already sort of making my ears prick up as something that needs to be read.
Yes, I mean, it's just it really is a terrific read, a surprising read, because once you got over that slight hurdle of the first chapter, which some may not find upsetting, but it really is an exceedingly good book.
So remind us again of the author and the title.
It's M.W. Craven, and it's just called The Puppet Show, and that's published by Little Brown.
And you're going through your list there. It's a local author. I know you were very impressed by Kate Rhodes' book.
Oh, yes. I loved Burnt Island, which is the third in her silly set. That's the Silly Islands, rather than the silly detective stories. And it's terrific. The first one was Hell Bay, and then it was Ruin Beach, and now Burnt Island. And it really is, strong characterization and good plot, but more importantly I think the evocation of place, and this is set on one of the smaller islands of the Scillies, a killer on the loose in a small community, but I think Kate in particular, she's given her detective, who's again is on the island, he's acting chief of police, but he'd given him a bit of a past, and he's escaping from, again, another London force for some misdemeanour that might or might not have been committed.
Well, let's hear from Kate, as I spoke to her earlier in the year about Ruin Beach, and here she is just talking about, the victims, really.
Yeah, it really worries me when people are only writing about vulnerable female victims. So I write about male victims as well. In this particular case, I chose a really, really strong woman who does something that I could never do in a month of Sundays as the victim. I wanted to have her death be a real travesty and have the whole community be up in arms about it, as they would do for such a strong woman. What she does is she's not just a deep sea diver, but she's a free diver. So she's one of those people who will dive deep, deep into the ocean without an oxygen tank and then return to the surface as a competitive sport, which is, the whole sport of free diving. Now, the very idea of that for somebody like me, who's quite claustrophobic, is absolutely terrifying. But some people say it's incredibly peaceful. You're tunneling your way down to the bottom of the sea and then you're rushing back up to the freedom of the air. So I wanted to make her a tough cookie, and I felt a genuine bit of sadness when she died at the start of the book.
That was Kate Rhodes there, and it is important. The victim is important. I mean, we tend to, in crime fiction, think about the detective, but we've got to care, haven't we, that this person has been killed?
Oh, yes, definitely. And I think especially in the book saved by Louise Penny, you sort of think of the Canadian author, 14 very good books with Inspector Gamache, and they're all set in this small hidden away community that no one's, it's not even on the map in Quebec, and in this sort of small community in each book you have either an outsider who's recently moved to this small community bumped off, or you have one of the community bumped off, and you really do feel for, because it's such a disturbance that just as
so there's still anybody there, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
They'll be all moving,
yes,
out for a dangerous place to live.
I know.
So that's Kate Rhodes and the Scilly Isles series.
Yes, that's Burnt Island. Very, very good indeed. And
well, let's talk more about local authors after we've listened to your second choice of music. So this is The Unthanks and Died for Love. Why this one?
Well, again, it's one of those things. We went, I think, my wife heard them on a TV programme and we listened to the whole concert, as she sort of beckoned me to come and listen. And we thought they had fabulous voices, a bit sort of different, quite sort of breathy. And then a couple of years ago, we went to a concert at the Corn Exchange where they were performing their sort of tribute to Nick Drake. His mother, Gabrielle Drake, the actress, was there as well. And she read out some poetry from her mother. And they sang the songs interpreting this poetry. And I just thought, and think their voices are just so distinct. And so, again, you've got that, as in the Handel, that sort of wistful and quite sort of melancholic voice.
With Lee Chambers on Cambridge 105 Radio.
With Heffer's Bookshop, the great Cambridge bookseller since 1876.
Our aspirations rather than books.
And it's a slightly different bookmark for Christmas. I'm joined by, from Heffer's, Richard Reynolds, crime fiction bookseller and buyer. We were talking there about Kate Rhodes before the music, local author. We are blessed with lots of local crime writers in Cambridge, aren't we?
Yes, terrific. I know loads of them. I was trying to encourage people who haven't yet set books in Cambridge to do so.
It must be good for you because not just that you've got local writers here, but they presumably attract other writers who want to come and talk at the bookshop.
Oh, they do, very much so. You know, people like Emily Winslow, who has produced 4 books now in a series, and they're all set in Cambridge. And, you know, you think of people like Jacqueline Winspear, who is an American writer, although she was born in Kent. She has a series set in the 1920s and the Maisie Dobbs series, and we sort of encouraged her that she might have set one in Cambridge, and she did so. And that's worked very well. And then, of course, we're very fortunate with the James Runcie, the Sydney Chambers books, and now on TV and
Grantchester.
All the Grantchester mysteries are terrific. And even, you know, with some Golden Age authors, I encouraged a publisher to reissue some Douglas Brown's The May Week Murder, and we've got the Asetina Griffin, The Punt Murder, and even The Boat Race Murder by Swarthout, who used to be the cox for the Cambridge boat, and it takes place, so one of the Oxford boat team gets bumped off. Not in Cambridge, it's actually on the Thames, but it's still a very good book.
Maybe the residents of Cambridge and the residents of that little Canadian town where Louise Penny said, and Midsummer, we could all get together.
We've all got something in common.
Yes, form a new place. Well, location, obviously, is very important. Let's start by talking about Peter Morfitt. He came in to talk about his novel Box of Bones. He sets his novels, his crime fiction, in Nice.
Yes, I think that's, he's very familiar with Nice. He goes there a lot, and he was he's written lots of radio plays and written for different comedy shows, and so he's got a real ear for dialogue, and there's a lot of dialogue in these books, and he loves jazz, and that comes through very clearly in the books. And his detective Captain Paul Darak of the Nice Brigade is a musician at night when he gets the time, but it's got that nice slant to the books, and I think they work very well. There's 3 so far, and there will be a 4th one called Knock 'em Dead, published in March next year.
Well, let's hear from Peter Morfitt. He came in to talk to me earlier this year about Box of Bones.
You know, my love affair with that began, as with so many other people, a summer holiday, which is our first as a young family going abroad for the first time. And we were quite simply overwhelmed, you know, in that moment when the plane door opens and you stand there for the first time, this is abroad, we were thinking. And the heat, you know, the exotic smells, not all of them sweet, but above all that radiant southern light, that was the thing that was captivating. And that, you know, that was sort of began a love affair. You know, as with many love affairs, we've had our ups and downs, France and me. But 30 plus years later, it's a love that's still strong. And anyone who is familiar with Nice knows that backed by that amazing Alpe Maritime mountain range and with the eponymous Azure coastline at its feet, it's as beautiful, really, as any Mediterranean resort. But it's also a multi-ethnic city with 500,000 souls, and so it has its fair share of problems and crime, and that's where my central character, Captain Paul Darak, comes in.
That was Peter Moffat there talking about Nice. He does really bring it to life, doesn't he?
Oh, tremendously, yes. I think, you know, I found with the first book, Impure Blood, very atmospheric opening chapters, and then before long you realise you've read 150 pages, and, you know, it just moves along seamlessly. Beautifully written.
Well, let's talk now about Jim Kelly, The Great Darkness, set in Cambridge in the past.
Yes.
In the Second World War. Let's just hear from him. He came in to talk about that right at the beginning of the last series of Bookmark, seeing him conduct that.
Yeah, it still really works, doesn't it?
It still sends a tingle down the spine, yeah. Jim's first novel, The Water Clock, was shortlisted for the John Creasy Award and won a Crime Writers Association.
It was a shift I said I was never going to do, because people always said, oh, you should set something in Cambridge. And I mean, I really like the atmospherics of the open landscape and then the atmospherics of the coast. And I thought, well, I don't think a town is where I want to go. But then I thought, if I put it in the war, that would change things. And also Eden Brooke, my hero, is a veteran of the First World War, and his eyes are damaged, and so he spends most of his sort of time out and about at night. So I thought, if I put sort of night together with 1939 Cambridge, I'd be kind of looking at the city in a completely different way, and I could get a lot of atmospherics out of that situation. And also it just wouldn't look like the cliché, which I think kind of really frees the whole thing up.
Yes, what I really enjoyed about it was it wasn't just the colleges. You go to Romsey, you go to Madingley, yeah. You go to the river.
Yes, and I tried really quite hard, didn't completely succeed, but I tried quite hard not to go in any of the colleges.
So what did you want to capture about Cambridge?
I think the sort of, well, actually something that probably isn't there, which is the sort of, I love that maze-like quality of a medieval city centre. I used to live in York. And I suppose if I had my wish for a year in a wonderful place, it would be Venice. So it's that kind of incredibly close, maze-like labyrinth feel. And, I mean, Cambridge is quite limited in size for that particular sort of quality. So what I did was I just added bits on. So that I've created bits of the city that don't exist in order to give us more of that kind of sort of feel.
Yes. How do you feel about doing that? Because it's 1939, so yes. It's within living memory. Were you concerned that anybody was going to come up to you? Because people will, won't they, and say, that street doesn't
yes.
lead there.
Yes. Well, people do it. And when I did the Fens, I always moved the geography around. I mean, I always try to make it clear that that's what's going to happen in the book. And I've never seen what... People are always, in fact, they expect a writer to make up characters using the basics of kind of human nature. And they expect them to make up a plot using reality, but putting it together in a different thing. But then they don't expect them to change the spatial place in which the story happens. And that's always been the most fun for me. I mean, I think you start in a recognisable place, but then, you know, Brooke goes down an alleyway and we're somewhere that doesn't exist.
That's Jim Kelly talking about his novel, The Great Darkness. I really enjoyed that. Really interesting as much as anything, because it's set during that time of the Second World War.
Yes. I thought it was... I mean, I loved that one, the sort of during the blackout and just that sort of wounded hero in Eden Brooke. I suppose, in a way. And I suppose in the second book, you get more of an inkling as to what happened to him and why nighttime is the better time for him. But it's really very good indeed.
And it's set in Cambridge, but as I was saying to him there, it would be easy to set something in Cambridge and go for the clichés.
Yes.
But he doesn't.
No,
he explores
no.
the city, yes. which is a delight when you're from Cambridge and you're reading it. Oh, this is at the end of my road.
Yes, no, it's terrific. And I think that just the by using one of the characters is one of the night porters at one of the colleges and dropping into them, and you really do get that sense of travelling within the sort of detective story of Eden sort of wandering around and the wild swimming, the night swimming, as I suppose, at Baron's Pool and things like that. And I think in Mathematical Bridge, the second in the series, again, you know, a terrific story. And a college porter makes, in making his nightly rounds, hears a boy's desperate screams coming from the icy waters. And that's such a, you know, that's the start of the book, and it just sort of works very well. And more riddles come to light, and then there's a second body, and terrific.
Terrific, it is indeed, I agree. And we must talk about Nicola Repson. She's had a great year, hasn't she?
Oh, terrific, yes. One of my favourite books was the last one, the M.R. James set detective story, which is Nine Lessons. And I just love the way she just, again, seamlessly seemed to sort of have woven in M.R. James's ghost stories into her story, and then also with her series detective Archie Penrose and Josephine Tay coming back to the city, and of course because it's set in Cambridge and around King's College choir, I thought it worked very well. But this one, Sorry for the Dead, I think really she's almost sort of taken the series up a notch. Because again, she's got a split time frame of 1915, when Josephine is working on a sort of farm in Charleston in Sussex, and also going forward the end of the 1940s, when a play is on in Cambridge and something comes back to haunt her from the past. And it just works, each chapter sort of works backwards and forwards between then, the 1930s and the 1940s. And it's just a brilliant story.
She's a very talented writer. And one writer that we have mentioned before, Ellie Griffiths, another great writer. Her heroine is an archaeologist. This is, she talked to me about her heroine when she came in to chat about Stone Circle.
The reason really was that my husband's an archaeologist. In fact, he wasn't an archaeologist when I met him. He worked in a merchant bank in the city, but he'd always wanted to be an archaeologist and had sort of done law just because that seemed a more sensible thing to do at the time. But I always remember when I first met him, he said, "Oh, you know, I didn't want to work in a bank. I wanted to be an archaeologist." And I thought, "Oh, that's so sweet. Oh, bless him." So we got married. You know, maybe not immediately, but we got married, and then we had two children. And he said, "Oh yeah, you remember that being an archaeologist? Well, you know, I'm going to do it now." So it seemed a lot less sweet, I can tell you. But really, it was wonderful for many reasons, and for him, but also for me, because it gave me the inspiration to write about Ruth. Through Andy, I found out there were such people as forensic archaeologists who are legitimately consulted by the police when they find buried bones or buried bodies, because they can tell how long they've been buried or how they were buried. So I thought that would be a very interesting contrast to have an academic and a detective, and their jobs are similar in some ways. You know, they're looking at the evidence. Archaeologists are very, very painstaking with the way they do that, but there would be differences. You know, Ruth is open to looking at the sort of mystical sides of archaeology, where the policeman, DCI Nelson, does not have any time for any of that.
I really enjoy her books. That sense of the archaeology of a place and uncovering the past and all the secrets that go with it. Very atmospheric writing.
Oh, yes. And of course, you know, you think in the first book, you discover that Ruth lives in a sort of out-of-the-way place. There's only four houses in the sort of the eeriest place possible. And as a character, and then sort of gradually her sort of relationship with the policeman Nelson and the growing through the series, and I think that has worked really very well indeed.
And that little group of characters that she has around them are all yes. very distinctive.
Yes, you know, sort of cast bad. You know, sort of, you know, I think in the, I can't remember which book it is, but it's
the
one
Druid,
that's a Walsingham,
yes,
one that comes to the fore there. And I just think, again, you're going to the books because you're meeting up with these people, and I've read all of them. And even though some say that the one set in sort of Norfolk and in Italy doesn't work so well, but I thought that was tremendously atmospheric, up on the mountain and the, you know, the dig and all that sort of thing.
Well, that's Ellie Griffiths. We're running out of time, sadly, but we should mention Alison Bruce and Susan,
yes,
Grossi, both,
oh, definitely, yes,
excellent,
terrific
local writers.
Yes.
Susan is set in the Regency. It's financial crime, isn't it?
Yes, and that's her day job. And so she understands, you know, fraud within the business world and everything. She's a very good speaker. And I think Sam Plank is really an amazing sort of creation. She's now written the sixth book in that series. And I'm trying to persuade her if she'd just like to do something else and then go back and write the seventh one. But we'll see.
And Alison, very different. I mean, that's very up-to-date, very urban and very gritty.
Yes, and of course, you know, just behind you in sort of Cambridge Cemetery, one of her books was set or had a little bit of a setting there. And I think, you know, you think there's the, in Cambridge Blue, the death on A Midsummer Common in the just outside. And one of, I know when they take people on tours in that area, one of the chaps in the houses down there said, oh, it happened outside my house.
On your doorstep,
yes,
literally.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's go cut to the chase here, Richard. What's your all-time favourite crime novel?
Oh, it has to be Agatha Christie's The Murder,
really,
of Roger Ackroyd. Yes,
really?
Yes.
After everything,
yes,
you've read, you'd still go back to that?
Yes, I would do. Yes, I think it's a great story. And you can't, I can't really say very much about
no,
it because
give it away.
I don't want any, but it, I mean, it's known the world over, and I think that, you know, there was a super David Suchet version of it, but there's nothing like reading the book. And terrific. I think, you know, the close run thing was sort of Raymond Chandler, The Big Sleep, or Patricia Highsmith, The Talented Mr. Ripley, or again, Josephine Tay, The Daughter of Time. And the one of my that fits into that top five is rather an eccentric book by a German author called Leni Swan, called Three Bags Full, which is about, and it fits very well with the Agatha Christie, a sheep investigating,
oh, yes,
the death of a shepherd.
I've heard about this, yes.
And the sheep is called Miss Maple.
So it's a lot of fun, yes.
Yes,
I've heard,
yes,
about that. So what are you reading at the moment? This is a question we ask all our guests on Bookmark.
I'm reading, one or two things. I'm reading Abhi Mukherjee's latest of the Calcutta Set Mysteries, which is very good. That's the fourth in the series. And he has some... his detective, Captain Wyndham, and his sidekick, Surendranath Banerjee. And this time, that's in a split time frame between 1905 and 1922. So we're going back to the beginning of Wyndham's life, when he was an honest copper and everything in East End of London. And now he's in Calcutta and up in the hills. Terrific book.
Well, thank you, Richard. It's been lovely spending a Christmas Bookmark with you. Really nice talking through there. Just a heads up, the next show will be, the next new show will be in January next year. It's got a very British theme to it. Our studio guest will be David Reynolds, working our way through the rent. Any relation?
No.
David Reynolds, he'll be talking about his book Ireland Stories, Britain and Its History in the Age of Brexit, about how Britain's sense of national identity has been shaped and contested throughout history. We'll also hear from Simon Parkin on his book A Game of Birds and Wolves, how a game of battleships and a group of exceptional young women won the Second World War. And Isabella Tree will be talking about her book Wilding, The Return of Nature to a British Farm. May we wish you, from Bookmark and everyone here at Cambridge 105 Radio, a very happy Christmas. I hope you get all the books in your stocking that you wish for. We will sign out now, Richard, with your last choice of music. And I know I'm not going to pronounce this correctly. It's Erno Dognani,
yes,
Piano Quintet number 2 in E-flat minor. What is it about this one that you like?
Oh, I think I heard a concert about a year ago. And from the Heffers Music Shop, I'd bought one of the Tokaj Quartet's other CDs. And I'd asked about this one, and it hadn't yet been recorded. And it's just been released, and I just love the sense of, again, you've got that slight wistfulness, but I love it.
Thank you, Richard, and happy Christmas.
And to you too, Lee. Thanks very much indeed.
Cambridge 105 Radio.